Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Aviation Sustainability Africa. This is a podcast that explores the implication of socioeconomic sustainability and climate change for the global aviation industry, with particular focus on the African continent. It features interviews with experts from airline, airports, civil aviation authorities, think tanks, tourism bodies, and other organizations with emphasis on ESG. The podcast will help us to gain insights into the latest trends and developments, the challenges and possible solutions, technological innovations, and the changing mindset towards the sustainability in the aviation industry. I'm your host, Tunde Kachukwu, and today, as our guest, we have Don Slot. He's the CEO of Volatus Infrastructure and Energy Solutions, one of the world's leading electric mobility infrastructure firms, providing turnkey solutions for eVTOL aircraft through vertiport consulting, designs, and construction, as well as universal multimodal charging and several energy generations to improve local and to improve local grid stability. Dan is also the founder and president of Advanced Air Mobility Institute, an international nonprofit research center dedicated to educating and advocating for the broadest public benefit through the AAM ecosystem. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to ASAP Podcast, Dan.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony. Appreciate it.
Great. So tell me, Dan, what do you do at Volatus Infrastructure and Energy Solutions? I mean, I've read an intro, but kind of take us deeper to what you work you do at Volatus.
Certainly. So my initial role was actually serving as technical advisor to the primary co-founder, Grant Fisk. And in that capacity, mostly I helped advise in a legal regulatory capacity. Also, helped really be a sounding board for some of the business decisions early on. It was spring of this year where the where Grant kind of pulled me aside and he said, listen, I we already worked so closely together, for the business, legal, and operational advice. And I could tell that in many ways, the reason he started down this path is because he has such a strong passion for the practical solutions. And so in many ways, Tony, I kind of see my role as CEO as really shielding him from, all of the kind of headaches that come along with running a company. The paperwork and occasional people drama, and really kind of positioning myself as a cheerleader in many ways, right? To be, like we were just speaking before we, before the show began, about just the importance of being visible in as broad of a community as you consider. We're certainly trying to develop our business operations internationally. So I spent quite a bit of time in Europe and even as far as Dubai just this fall. And so the role as a CEO really kind of crafting the vision, making sure that the kind of projects that we pursue are very much in line with our kind of our core mission, and that is this idea of equity of accessibility. It's very important to us that that we address with tangible solutions this very legitimate concern that advanced air mobility, in particular passenger carrying eVTOLs, will be something that is largely, if not exclusively, limited to just wealthy elite. Right, that these are, high net worth individuals who, will pay really any fees to get out of, road traffic. And we feel strongly that for advanced mobility to reach its potential, this has to be something that is available in as many neighborhoods as want it. We have I'll advocate very strongly against these operations taking place in any community that is not receptive to it. You know, and truth be told, they don't need a necessarily a firm or even, you know, scientifically sound reason for it. But if the majority decides, you know, this is something that they don't see kind of a, you know, net benefit from you know, being in the local vicinity, then I don't think it should be forced upon them. So we don't expect, you know, deployment to be uniform, you know, across the globe. It'll come in waves. But it's important to us to position these as affordable as possible. And I'm sure you could agree that, you know, if whatever the product or service is, if it's not affordable to begin with, then it can't possibly claim to be accessible.
Thank you, Dan. You mentioned quite a valid point when you said that, you know, it should be affordable. I mean, generally in Africa, I mean, air transport is kind of elitist, okay? It's not, I mean, it's just another means of transportation, but that's not the way it is in Africa. The costs are high beyond your regular individual to fly by air. I give you a typical example from Nigeria where I am. Just about, we are over 200 million, but just about a little bit below 10% fly by air. You can imagine. Okay, now this is commercial aviation. Now with the advent of eVTOLs coming, you can really sense that it kind of appears to be for the elite. So now how do you plan in democratizing this initiative, which should be accessible to all, especially even in the rural areas where, you know, and of course the urban cities where there is congestion and population boosting, but the core is how would this be accessible? Is the rollout going to be first for the elites, then gradually down the line it begins to come down? What is the plan for this disruption of AAMs?
Certainly. And you know, so much of it comes down to economies of scale, right? Working closely with government regulators, assuring them that we have the hard data to support just how safe this means of transportation can and will be. And then allowing, you know, we need to scale up the production to such an extent that now we're really starting to see the cost savings. You know, just like, you know, harking back to, you know, the early 1900s when automobiles were first being constructed, you know, Henry Ford with the, you know, being a visionary with the assembly line, you know, we find that, you know, some of the numbers are pretty striking. From what I recall reading, the first automobiles coming off the production line, you know, were roughly $2,500 to $3,000. Now, today, I would love to buy a car for, you know, $3,000. But at that time, you know, that was very, very expensive, prohibitively expensive for the vast majority of people. But with the advent of the assembly line, you know, the Model T, you know, there's that, you know, he's got that famous expression, you know, Model T comes in any color so long as it's black, right? And through that uniform production, right, being able to produce at a very high scale, they were able to get those initial vehicles as cheap as $500, right? So, you know, an 80% reduction in costs, that put it well within the reach of many, many more households. And so if we approach this right, and we don't let, you know, misconceptions kind of halt or otherwise limit production because of assumed increases to safety, increased risk to safety, then we can achieve similar rates of economies of scale. And in particular, I want to focus on the fact that there's been so much attention on the air taxi use case. It's hard to envision that use case being affordable anytime within the next decade or so. But at the Advanced Air Mobility Institute, we very much believe in the importance of utilizing this technology for emergency air medical service, for example. You know, that's a there's really no arguing that that is an enormous benefit, certainly for the direct patients that would be transported, especially because there are so many individuals who live in remote and rural communities that are plainly too far away for first responders to get the call to dispatch via ground ambulance and return to the emergency room in time to make a meaningful difference in that outcome. So through this technology, we see an awful lot of benefit because it's not just the individual patient, as I'm sure you'd agree, Tony. It's their family, it's their friends, it's their employer who's counting on them, right, as a skilled worker. So we feel very strongly that if we can accelerate access for emergency health, for public safety, that's the way that, you know, the everyday citizen can directly and indirectly benefit from this technology sooner.
Thanks, Dan. That brings me to my next question, which will be what you just mentioned about, you know, safety. You know, so you are talking about safety of individuals, and let's also look at safety of the equipment. Now, you have a legal and regulatory background. Now, with the AAMs, what are the legal and regulatory frameworks and the safety underpin for this technology that is coming? You know, do we have a framework? Is it being worked on? Do we have like a body that looks on the safety, you know, processes of this disruption? So tell me more about it, because you have that background.
Yes. So this is a very exciting time in aviation. You have regulatory bodies from FAA, EASA. We work quite a bit with CASA down in Australia. You know, it's countries all over the globe who are faced with this challenge of how do we kind of balance incorporating and integrating this novel technology into our national airspace systems in a way that, of course, still maintains this very, very high level of safety that aviation's come to be known for, right? It's a, you know, pretty, considering how many people are transported, you know, via commercial airlines, you know, the incident rate and certainly the death rate is remarkably low. Certainly when we compare it against automobiles, no question. And so one of the things that I find particularly exciting about Advanced Air Mobility is that, so I'm not sure if I shared, but I am a Part 61 private pilot myself. And, you know, one of the biggest takeaways is safety through redundancy, right? Anytime we can build systems in a way that if there is, you know, in the rare event of a failure, you know, do we have another system on board that we can lean on to carry out, you know, a safe flight? And Advanced Air Mobility, many of the designs, they're multi-rotor, right? So at one point there were as many as 800 different designs. So I couldn't possibly speak to, you know, the full gamut, but I'll share one as an anecdote. There is a design out there with 16 rotors that could lose as many as four rotors and still finish the flight without incident. You know, lose four of anything in traditional aviation, and, you know, I think you're kind of, you know, maybe saying your prayers, or, you know, that's a very precarious position to be in, losing four of anything. So a lot of the safeties coming out through the redundancy of the onboard systems. you know, and we've had as a, you know, as a broader community, we've seen quite a bit of this, the benefit on the UAS drone side. You know, there's plenty of cases where the multi-rotor system, you know, the remaining rotors are able to consistently compensate for the loss of such a rotor. There's a particular discussion taking place about how much fuel, if you will, in this, in many of the cases, electric battery, how much time remaining in reserve. That certainly implicates safety. We want to make sure that, you know, whatever the intended route, you know, from vertiport A to vertiport B, that in the event, you know, if there's maybe, you know, birds or other wildlife obstructing the TLOF, or maybe there's unauthorized persons or vehicles, you know, where landing would be unsafe, it is important that there's enough either fuel or battery in reserve. And we're still trying to figure that out. In the U.S. anyway, general aviation requires 30 minutes reserve. For some of these vehicles, 30 minutes is their full capacity, right? So from the moment they take off, 30 minutes is the full extent that they have to carry out any flight. So ones at that scale, I think it makes sense that they carry out these smaller flights, or rather shorter flights. It's been really interesting to see among those 800 designs, you know, how are they incorporating different safety features? And of course, bearing in mind, safety is the kind of thing where you've got your legal regulatory minimums, but you know, you're almost certain to, you know, garner greater interest and, you know, and that can translate to more sales for OEMs to go out and add, you know, above and beyond additional safety features, for example, ballistic parachutes, to their vehicles in the event of a, you know, total loss of propulsion. So it's been really cool to follow all of the, you know, just the sheer diversity of designs. And safety, of course, is going to be utmost importance.
Great. I particularly like the design from Light Aviation, having the hybrid format, you know, so you can use SAF or hydrogen and batteries. So that's for sure kind of buffers the burden you keep on the batteries and rely just on the batteries when you can always switch that. I mean, I'm not in that sector technologically inclined to that, but I think I like the idea of having hybrid, you know, just to only batteries. But having said that, so let's bring it kind of home. You said you've been doing a lot of traveling, exploring regions and how to expand your business. So, I mean, this podcast is basically targeted to Africa, you know, how this whole affects Africa. Do you have any interest about Africa? Do you have partners in Africa looking to expand in this region? And what does Africa hold, you know, what promise does Africa hold when it comes to advanced air mobility?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, so we have at the Advanced Mobility Institute, we have a board of liaisons, last count, we have 33 different countries represented, one project in particular, you know, shout out to our liaison to Kenya. Her name's Mercy. She's doing a lot of fantastic work, especially to encourage and inspire the local youth, you know, to take an interest in aviation, and in particular to recognize that excelling in their math and science courses certainly set them up for success. You know, there'll be, you know, that many more opportunities available in the greater aerospace industry for future careers. There's a project in particular that we're engaged in to utilize uncrewed aerial systems as a platform to transport blood there in Kenya. And from what I understand, there's the roadways to and from this particular clinic would be relatively slow with an automobile. I mean, that's just the nature of infrastructure we have to consider. Not just whether it's feasible for a mode of transportation to get to and from, but a keen eye towards not only is it sustainable from a financial standpoint, is it sustainable from just the wear and tear on the vehicle, considering the infrastructure that's available, but also environmentally sustainable. So we're quite excited about the use of fully electric, possibly even integrating hydrogen propulsion drones, and certainly the transport of life-saving blood is right in line with that healthcare use case I touched on earlier. Coincidentally, when I was over in Portugal, connected with our liaison there, Renato, and he was sharing that his team is supporting similar efforts in Guinea, so we're going to be looking to kind of swap best practices and lessons learned to try to understand. Not only how can we do this in the most cost-effective, efficient way, right, to transport the blood as quickly and safely as possible, but also that we have a keen sense of how the local community feels, right? If we fail to communicate what the purpose of these drones are, it certainly makes sense that there'll be questions. And for anyone who's not familiar, it's just kind of a foreign technology. That's human nature. I'm sure you'd agree, Tony, that the things that we don't know about can be scary, and so we want to make sure that we're doing our part to convey to those local communities that hey, this is. For the expedited transport of blood, if they go out certain temperature ranges, then it can effectively spoil, and unfortunately that blood donation is no longer viable. Those kind of requirements, I think in many ways drive uses of new technology like this. So those are just two projects that we think have quite a bit of value. And then, of course, I was very fortunate to visit Tsitsikamma Rainforest down in South Africa. I mean, there's an incredible amount of natural beauty throughout Africa, and plenty of cultural sites. So there's already been discussion about, for example, when it comes to viewing and admiring wildlife, that there may be room for eVTOLs in overflight to fly at an altitude where viewing is not only safe for the passengers, but that they are they don't disrupt natural habitats or frighten the animals, and I think there's a lot of potential there as well.
Great, Dan. That brings me to I was going to You've already touched on the institute, but we're going to go deeper. But your last statement, which talked about, bringing this Evito to serve communities and, wildlife conservation and the rest of it. So tell me, how do you see, because again, what we are focused on is environmental sustainability at Evitos Africa and on this podcast. So, and how all these disruptions and technologies affect the environment. Obviously, the advanced air mobility disruption is skewed, to, help the environment as against, commercial aviation where we are, emitting carbons. And then this is, of course, the solution-based approach while also disrupting the market. So tell me, how do you see the tourism destinations plugging into this disruption, especially in Africa where you have a lot of, tourist attractions, that usually will not really be accessible. And of course, conserving the animals as well, noise pollution, and just what you said. How do you think this will be greeted with tourism boards and a tourism destination? Because also, I noticed this is an area you're also interested in delving into.
Yes, and truth be told, at Volatus, of course, we will optimize and maximize to full extent possible the renewable energy generation. Use of solar is really kind of a no-brainer. That we make extensive use of that. Wind is a bit trickier because modern windmills, of course, are quite tall, and that has implications on aviation, approach and departure paths. So, in locations where there's quite a bit of land to work with. We'll certainly make use of those as space becomes more constrained because of close proximity to dense urban centers. It'll also have an impact on radar, and so we're looking to be a bit more creative and really try to capture and convert as much of the downwash from operations themselves. So, the eVTOL during takeoff or on landing, quite a pretty incredible amount of downwash is created during those two phases. So we're looking to capture as much of that as we can with very low profile wind turbines. And it has the added benefit of reducing this idea of visual pollution. You kind of alluded to it, Tony. A strong benefit of advanced mobility comes in the form of wildlife preservation, because it's not just that there's no potholes in the sky, right?
Yeah.
That's a very fortunate thing. So the ongoing maintenance of the infrastructure is drastically less as compared to automobiles on highways. But it's also the case, of course, overflight of rainforest, savanna, even mountains, when it doesn't require newly built and maintained roadways, it doesn't have that same divisive impact on the environment. People often forget that when you build a highway, especially with guardrails in place, it serves to bifurcate the natural environment, right? And we have to take the additional steps, and you see this. I've seen instances of this where there's a concerted effort to make sure that there's a relatively natural and usable kind of land bridge over highways for animals to cross. But I see that as one of the major advantages of advanced mobility, especially in locations with such, you know, vast natural beauty. You know, where we can, let's limit the amount of roadways while also not giving up the positive economic benefit of connecting communities.
Thank you, Dan. As we now begin to wind down, I would like to now take you back to your institute, the Advanced Air Mobility Institute. Of course, you mentioned the liaisons you have, some operations in Kenya, I think maybe South Africa. I didn't hear you mention West Africa or Nigeria to be specific. You know, with over 200 million people, you guys have to be doing something around this regions. Anyways, so tell me more about the institute. Do you guys, you know, is it educational? Do you create awareness? Do you conduct trainings? Tell me more about the institute and, you know, where you guys are physically, or your liaisons in Africa, and what you guys do.
Yes. Well, let me first speak to Nigeria. One of our close programming partners, the Global Air Drone Academy, led by Eno. He's doing fantastic work and goes back to visit quite often. So a lot of our support is in concert with Global Air Drone Academy. Maybe I'll share this episode with Eno, and it'll kind of encourage him to either join as a liaison himself, or to identify. That being said, you know, we would love to have a liaison in every country in the world. We do have a liaison to Malawi as well, but certainly much more representation needed throughout Africa. Turning to kind of what our purpose and focus at the Advanced Air Mobility Institute. So we have three guiding principles: safety, dignity, and security. And safety, of course, is in the traditional sense, you know, a person's physical safety as a passenger. But you know, as I noted with the healthcare use cases, but also other forms of public safety, for example, firefighting. You know, there's some, you know, fantastic technology being developed that can not only identify very early on the onset of, for example, either a wildfire or a structural fire, and dispatch drones immediately to that scene and put it out before, you know, possibly even before firefighters are able to, you know, kind of get out the door. And it's not quite prevention, but early suppression of those fires, of course, is worth quite a bit, not only in the, you know, the financial impact of fire damage, but just the loss of life. Security is about, dignity is about protecting the civil, environmental, and human rights of everyday citizens when it comes to this technology. You know, with a legal background myself, I'd say one of the biggest takeaways is trying to think about, I'm an optimist naturally. So often I think in terms of, you know, okay, what good can come from this technology? But law school really helped me to kind of balance that out and acknowledge that, you know, any technology in the wrong hands, or even just in the hands of individuals or organizations that are underinformed, can create risks in itself. We can risk infringing on some of these human rights. I'll give the example of human trafficking. You know, a vehicle that's, you know, substantially cheaper to purchase, much easier to operate than a conventional helicopter, that's designed to be more quiet. You know, that could, unfortunately, that could be a very attractive kind of tool for human traffickers. It's something that, you know, that we want to be very cognizant of and advocate that policies and practices are instituted now, to try to mitigate that altogether. And then lastly, our principle, regarding security, that certainly, it began as, purely the cybersecurity, right? Making sure that we protect the digital systems that control this new mode of transportation, but it also has impact on our educational system, like I shared earlier about, you know, kind of leveraging this technology as a tool to inspire and encourage, you know, greater involvement and commitment to the STEM courses. But also our financial systems, because again, you know, connecting communities, there's certainly a lot of impact to quality of life. you know, plainly, your access to more jobs, and therefore your ability to, it's access to a broader range of jobs, but also broader range of schools. You know, effective transportation, it's said that it's not just about getting people from A to B, but it's in fact about expanding your sphere of influence. And I think that's a really cool way to think about transportation. So it's not just that we can help people, you know, connect with their community through arts and culture, but also, you know, just kind of really the opportunities are such that it can improve many different facets of a individual's life and therefore benefit the community as a whole.
Thank you, Don. It's been some insightful, close to 40 minutes having conversation. I'm sure we could go, you know, more and more, but I think we've covered quite a bit. Just like you know, Aviators Africa is pioneering aviation sustainability in Africa, and annually we have conferences. It will be an honor, just like we said, to have you come to our conference in 2024. We're yet to announce the country, which I think will be interesting for you to also visit. So on that note, I want to thank you very much for spending some time with us, and I'm looking forward to catching and knowing more of your endeavors in the AAM venture and the disruptive market, and looking forward to seeing you soon.
Tony, I appreciate the opportunity. Fantastic to meet you. And yeah, I really appreciate the mission at ASAP. You know, this is, again, I think it's a very exciting time in humanity. You know, we're only the fifth generation to have powered flight. Yeah. So that we're having, you know, that we've got such passionate advocates like yourself, making sure not only is there access to aviation, but it's done in a responsible, environmentally friendly way.
Thank you very much, Dan.
Thank you.
See you soon.
Take care.